So thank you for coming. My name is Eric Eide. I'm from the University of Utah, and this is joint work with two of my colleagues at Utah, Lee Stoller and Jay LePro. And I'm very happy to be here today to present our paper. So here's our paper. Since I imagine you can't read it from that great distance, let's zoom in a little bit near the beginning. It starts off with this relatively high-minded and frou-frou statement about how scientific communities advance through repeated research, and isn't this all very great? And clearly the person who wrote this has a problem, and since I wrote this, I can tell you what my problem is. And my problem is that I basically can't manage my own experiments, right? I can't remember what I did yesterday. So let me give you a little example from my past. So in a previous life, I was a middleware developer, and I was involved in a multi-research group project to improve some real-time middleware against CPU and network overloads. We were running this particular example here that involved a simulated unmanned aerial vehicle relaying images down to a ground station to an automatic target recognition. Okay. No, nothing I don't really want to explain here, other than there's this big collaboration going on. And together, we got together and decided that we were going to run 19 separate setups of this thing. And for every one of those, we were going to collect 56 separate metrics over a long period of time. And this is obviously a lot of work. So how are we going to solve our problem? Well, we're going to use Emulab. Isn't Emulab great? Emulab will solve all of our problems, right? So we define our experiments. We set up our networks. And you know what? Emulab by itself isn't enough. Why isn't it enough? Well, the testbed gives me access to resources here. Here's one of our cluster racks, right? But once I have those resources, it's like I got the car keys from my dad, right? And the you know, he says, here's the keys, you know, but he hasn't bothered to teach me how to drive, right? So once I get these resources, how am I supposed to use them? Well, I mean, how hard could it be? All I have to do is package, distribute, configure, instrument, initialize, execute, monitor, stop, collect, analyze, archive, revise, and repeat my experiment. How much could that be, right? So how much work has the testbed saved me? Well, in truth, of course, it saved me a lot, but it can obviously do a better job. And what is it that's missing? Well, so as I said, the testbed does a good job at managing these resources and configuring them and help me setting them up, but it's not really helping me perform my experiments in some sense, right? I have to go through all of these steps in order to execute my software and gather my results and create my archives and do the analysis. And this is generally referred to as scientific workflow, okay, in other communities. And you know, managing my stuff on a day-to-day basis is not really so hard until I start scaling up, until I'm starting to communicate with every one of you, right? We're all going to get together and do an experiment. Well, you know, just hacking something up together, you know, it's not going to work, right? As we scale up, we end up having this big problem, okay? So what is it that I need to do all those things, okay? What I need is a way to encapsulate my workflows. I need ways to automate what I'm doing. I need ways to sort of get the instrumentation in place and preserve this stuff over time so that I can find it next week, next month, next year, you know, 3 months from now when I'm giving this talk, I can remember what my results were, okay? If I have all of these things, what am I going to be able to do? Well, I'm going to be able to go back, verify my previous results. I could, more importantly, go back to a previous experiment. So wouldn't it be interesting if I tweak this parameter and I go off in this other direction, okay? Maybe I've missed something before. I mean, this is how research works. We take each other's results, and we branch off, and we grow as a community, right? So it's not just that I want to repeat my own research, but I want to be able to repeat somebody else's, okay? And all of this is basically about repeatable research. So what's our opportunity here? Well, we as a community already have these great resources called testbeds managed by software such as Emulab. Can't Emulab or similar kinds of systems do something to help us out, right? Okay, so why shouldn't we? We can do the opportunity is to get the lab manager to help us out. And so instead of just managing resources, let's manage my processes too. Let's integrate the resource management with the experimental process management. Let's get things like encapsulation. Let's be able to automate my experiments in a serious way, more than just, you know, this is the script I wrote today, and this is the totally different script that I wrote, you know, the next day, right? And let's make this thing, we'd like this to be reusable, right? We'd like to be able to use it more than once, obviously, okay? And if we have this framework as a community, we get a leg up on when we start our research, okay? And we have a basis for sharing things, okay? Because if everybody uses the same higher level starting point, basically we you know, all rising tide raises all ships, okay? So manage the scientific workflow, but also manage the lab. So this paper is that I've already shown to you, so I don't need to show it to you again, is about our research developing an experimentation workbench and for what we call replayable research, which for now is basically this idea of combining experiment management with this environment that gives me the ability to re-execute it trivially, essentially. I mean, extremely easily. I've already told you, of course, that this is a very high-minded idea, and what I'm really interested in is solving my own problems. But the important thing here is that we want to leverage the lab management software, right? We're using the EmuLab lab management software because it's capable of controlling all kinds of devices, including wireless devices and cluster devices and Planet Lab slivers. And in some of the results I show later on, we're going, some of those experiments use Planet Lab slivers for these things. So the paper and the rest of my talk is about the design and the evaluation of the workbench that we've implemented to date. This is very much a work in progress. But this essentially is the outline of the rest of my talk. We're going to talk about the new model of testbed-based experiments that we had to develop as part of the workbench. Okay. Talk a little bit about the implementation and what we learned from using the prototype implementation so far. So any questions? No. So this is just a little bit of a review for some of you. So this is the EmuLab notion of what constitutes an experiment. So if I want to run an experiment in EmuLab today, the first thing I need to do is I need to make a definition of what this experiment is. And typically, an experiment consists of a topology, okay, that contains some number of nodes and network links. It's got software by reference, which means these are the operating systems I might load on, and maybe I know the URL of some RPM that I'd like to install. You know, I sure hope it's there tomorrow, sort of thing. And some notion of things that might happen in here. Okay. Once I've got this written down, either in an NS file or I've used some other tool, like a GUI tool, I can go to the EmuLab web interface, I can upload this thing, and it goes into EmuLab's database. Okay, so this definition is there, ready for action. Okay, so at some later time or immediately, I can come along, I can swap this in, which basically means find physical resources in the testbed that correspond to the logical description that I've given here. EmuLab does all the magic, it loads all the operating systems, so on and so on and so on, and you know, poof, I've done Genesis, right? Okay, so that's the swapping in. I can also swap it out, and which means to take away the resources, okay, and then I can come back the next day, swap it back in, swap it out, swap it in, swap it out. The point is that when I swap it out, the definition continues to live in the database, okay? Well, this is all pretty good. I mean, I've used this for years, right? I mean, so what's the problem, right? I mean, what we want to do is we want to build up this workbench on top of all this stuff. Well, the problem is that this previous way of working with experiments, an experiment is a single thing, okay? And it can either have resources or I take the resources away. Have. It's not a pattern for doing experiments. It is sort of, you know, an experiment by itself, which happens to have or not have resources. So I'm confusing what my experiment, what the definition of it is, what's its class, right, versus the instance of, you know, the object itself, okay? Every experiment is an island unto itself. We don't keep track of the relationships that might exist between experiments. Sorry about that. And this is important information for keeping track of what I've actually done, right? Now, acquiring resources can have some latency, and so people often like to do more than one thing once they've got their resources in a test bed. But we don't have any notion of that, right? If I'm running trials A, B, C, D, and E, I might like to remember that and not just have it in one great big tar file, but we have no notion of keeping track of that. Data management, where's data management and all that? There's none of that, okay? And this ecosystem, which is kind of a fancy word, for saying that my experiment is not just my topology and my software by reference, but it's actually the software itself, right? If the reference breaks, I'm not going to be able to repeat my experiment, Okay, so I really need to keep track of all of that. And I need to keep track of my input files, which might not even be referenced. Okay, and I need to keep track of the configuration that I might have had today and all this random stuff that I'm not properly encapsulating now. And of course, all of this stuff changes over time. And the way that Emulab normally works is that I can modify an experiment that exists in the database, but that's a destructive modification. There's no way for me to go back in history and remember what it was that I was actually doing last week so that I might be able to recreate the graph that I actually published in the paper, which may or may not have been accepted. So what we did is we took, as a first step to developing the workbench, we had to start by rethinking what it meant to be an experiment. And so what we did is we devised a new model of experimentation. And how did we do that? Well, we took the existing model and we applied divide and conquer. An Emulab experiment has all of these different roles. It's a definition. It's something that has resources. It's something that is my unit of work. And we're going to break these things up into multiple abstractions. And this is going to make sense in terms of what testbed users already know and what they do. Okay? But basically, we're going to break it up, and we're going to enhance these individual things. Okay? So now I'm going to dive down just a little bit and tell you a little bit about them. So at the top, we have this notion of a template. And a template is a repository. And most of you have used CVS or Subversion, so you have pretty much an intuitive notion of what a repository is. But the idea is that this is going to play the definition role of what an experiment is in the current Emulab. We're going to capture everything that I need, okay, in order to replay or in order to create the kinds of experiments that I want. All right. So we're going to actually have a file repository, something like Subversion. It turns out we actually use Subversion in our current implementation, but this isn't actually visible to users. And we're going to package all of this stuff up. And this is now going to be our definition of what an experiment is. Okay? Of course, there are certain things that we might not be able to actually package up, but as long as we have a strong reference, right, and we can trust that the data repository is going to be there in the future, right, we could have resources by reference too. Okay? So just a quick little recap. A template is sort of the experiment definition thing, except that it's got these files that I was just talking about. It's got parameters. And this is how we're going to be able to start describing related experiments, right? Instead of forcing people to modify by hand, say, I want to, a number of nodes is 10, number of nodes is 20, we're going to start doing, fairly straightforward parameterization on this thing. Obviously, these are definitions, so we're going to be able to make multiple instances of these, be able to run different kinds of experiments, and we're going to be able to attach metadata and keep track of the changes to the things over time. This is a quick screenshot of the template history in action. So here I've actually selected BitTorrent version 12, which is down here at the end of this tree. Some time ago, I started with a template BitTorrent, and I made version 2. I modified my template. And when I modify a template, I get a new template. Okay, just sort of like a repository works, right? I don't lose information when I make these things. Every time I change a template, I get a new template. And obviously, over time, you branch out and you form this tree. At some point, I decided that this was I can't go forward from here, and so I have to back up, and I can do that, right? And then come forward and actually, get success. Okay. Instantiating a template. Well, I've already pretty much covered this. The important thing here is that when you instantiate a template, obviously you have to provide values for the parameters, so I might be able to vary the number of clients or whatever. And we're going to remember these things. Okay. So I provide my parameters. Now I can make a template instance. So a template instance essentially corresponds to the idea that an experiment owns resources. A current Emulab experiment owns resources that are managed by the Emulab software. Now we're going to call that an instance. Okay. Now an instance, unlike a template is persistent and we save it forever, but an instance is essentially a resource allocation and therefore it's transitory. Okay. Obviously it's got nodes and networks. And as an addition to sort of the classic Emulab model, we're actually going to provide databases to users. So within the context, one of the resources we're now going to give you is we're going to give you a database so that you can use this for your own experimental activities. Within an instance, right, now so an instance is the resource allocation unit. Remember, I was describing how people might want to do more than one thing inside of an instance and actually remember, keep records of, experiments A, B, C, D, and E. So we're going to break these things up too. We're going to have this notion of a run, which essentially is a trial. It's a context for doing a unit of work. Okay, and we're going to have a notion of a first-class notion of activity, which you can think of as essentially a process or a script or a workflow. This is something that is going to consume and produce within the context of a run. Okay, these of course can be scripted or interactive, which is important because Emulab is used in many different ways. So we have to be sort of flexible in the notion of how this works. And the last thing is the record. And this isn't really too complicated. It's sort of the flight recorder of a run. The idea is that we find all of the things that have been produced by the activities that are running within a run, okay? And we collect them all up, put those in our permanent repository, and the testbed is going to remember these things for us, okay? We're not going to lose them because the testbed is now responsible for managing the products of my scientific workflow. Okay, these records all go into this repository. This is another screenshot of the repository in action. But what's really important here is, of course, what can I do with them? Well, essentially, I can view them, I can export them, I can replay them. So the idea is I can get the parameters out, I can find the input files that might not have been part of my template, things that were done dynamically, and be able to reinstantiate those and basically redo my my previous work. Okay? So moving on, we're going to talk about the evaluation and the lessons learned. So how do you evaluate a system like the Workbench? I mean, so Rob has all these pretty graphs that tell you that BitTorrent runs well here, it doesn't run well there, it's CPU bound, it's not CPU bound. This is a user tool, so what we need, of course, is user studies. This is to make users' lives better. And it's important, of course, to get this feedback, not just at the end, and not, we're not just flying off into the dark and say, hey, does this work, right? The point is to get continuous user feedback all the time. So the evaluation that's described in the paper is the case studies that we performed on the prototype Workbench today. We have three case studies, and I'm briefly going to touch on two of them, okay? And then we're going to cover some of the more general lessons learned that we take away from the case studies. Okay, so study number one, FlexLab development. So the FlexLab developers, of course, had this problem. As they modified their software, they, of course, needed to run it in Emulab, and they needed to run it in lots of different configurations, and you want to know, did this change make it better? Did this change make it worse? Okay. They had, of course, their own experiment management system for doing this. Okay. What did that experiment management system consist of? Well, they had a configurable NS file, and by this, I mean this is something that you would get out of the source repository, okay, and you'd hack it up. I want 10 nodes, I want 100 nodes, I want to use PlanetLab, I want to use FlexLab, right? You hack this thing up. They had some scripts that were sitting there that, did some support things for setting it all up. The other test infrastructure inside their repository. And, of course, they run this thing, they get those great graphs, they get these results. The results are now their problem, okay? They have to go off, they do the manual archiving. And, of course, since this is a big manual process, you go off, you change this thing, you get all this destructive modification, you can't repeat, and that's bad, right? So the point here essentially is that these things sort of map one-to-one across, right? This is the old way of doing things. We gave them the experiment workbench, said, why don't you try it out? Let's work on the software development task, right? And instead of the configurable NS file, it goes to a template. Instead of having the scripts, we're starting to talk about the runs. We can put the scaffolding and the results in the workbench, and we get those benefits. So maybe this isn't so surprising, but the general conclusion to draw, and this is, of course, we just have this one case study to draw from, is that this transition was not hard for them to accomplish, right? And so this is some sort of claim that the mental model of the FlexLab developers at least corresponds to the mental model that we expect developers to have, right? So study number two, FlexLab use. So another individual who was not a developer of FlexLab was tasked with the job of running BitTorrent on top of this software and obtaining results. Okay. Well, obviously, he needed to run this thing in lots of different configurations, you know, deploy it in different kinds of sizes, different kinds of BitTorrents. And what did he do? Well, he didn't have this infrastructure to start off with. He was doing, he built it up from scratch using the Workbench. And he used the parameters. He utilized the database that we gave to him, and he put the collected measurements in that database and used various tools against that database to produce these graphs. Okay, but the thing that I'm sort of most happy with is that this became a platform for team communication. So that paper had 9 authors, right? And instead of losing your results or saying, you know, no, it's not in my home directory over there, it's in my home directory over there, it's, okay, you know, whatever, right? Now the Workbench is responsible for keeping these things together, so it became a team communication vehicle, right? And you actually got results that appeared in now, you know, 2 slideshows. So not too bad. But of course, this case study also reveals some problems that are going to go into the lessons learned. The first one is the latency involved in setting things up, and the second one is what happens when Planet Lab nodes fail, or in general. Okay. So the first kind of lesson is storage. So we started off with this philosophy about storing everything because we might want to back up. Well, what did we do? We decided, you know, we need, if we're going to store everything, that's a lot of storage. We're going to need Subversion to keep track of this stuff, you know, keep our space problem under control. And of course, we're going to have a lot of stuff, so we need to do some careful UI design. Yes, thank you. So this is essentially what this table is showing is that we're getting good compression in terms of, and the amount of data that we're storing is reasonable, but the elapsed time is just outrageous for a user tool in some sense, right? On the order of minutes, right? And what happened is that people were really unhappy with this, right? So this is the time it takes to make these records, okay? And the way to hide latency, of course, is to pipeline operations. And so what we plan to do, and this is better described in the paper, is to pipeline the record-making activities with user activities, okay? Now, obviously, this presents a problem that your new activities might be destroying the very records that you're trying to get, and so we're actually planning to use branching file systems or snapshotting file systems. We've actually developed one, and we're planning to deploy it in a future version of the Workbench. The second thing had to do with sort of the use model and what users really wanted. And what users really want is a giant trash can, let me tell you. So I can't tell you how many times they said, what do you mean I can't delete anything in the Workbench? This thing is crap. Okay. They said, well, okay, can't we just hide it? No, I want it dead. I want it gone. Okay, this is a mistake, and I don't want anybody in the world ever to see it again, right? Now, obviously, this stuff might have some historic value, right? And so clearly there's a tension here, and we're going to need a range of options for actually deletion. But this is basically a new requirement. The second thing is this model idea. Okay, so what happened is we found out that this new model actually did, we think, map pretty well to users' mental models, but the model isn't quite sufficient yet for capturing what we call lifecycle concerns. And the idea is this. At these different levels of abstraction, there are different activities or modes of thinking going on. So at the instance level, we're worrying about managing the lab, and here we're worrying about managing the work. And if some alert happens to the lab, you know, we need to communicate those messages down. And similarly, we might want part of our process to be actually manipulating the lab and communicating these messages up. And currently, this is missing in our system. Okay. And so what we need to do is we're planning to further enhance and refine our model to deal with these kinds of things. So to sum up, our goal is better research through better living, right? Better processes. Let us help you make better research, right? Our prototype builds on existing testbed infrastructure. Okay, we leverage the Emulab testbed management software, and I want to repeat that it's not tied to the cluster because Emulab actually does manage many, many resources, including Planet Lab slices. Okay, and just to sum up, I think it's also my opinion that our experience demonstrates that there's, in fact, a lot of synergy to get from strong integration, not just layering an existing scientific workflow management system on top of something, but actually being able to get down into the resource management and deal with things at that level. So this is really very much in prototype. It's available to our internal users, like our FlexLab developers, and we are making it available to select you know, meaning brave, right? External users, and if you're interested in trying it out, please send us mail. And with that, I'm only, according to my watch, 6 seconds over, so.
Hey, I'm Pankaj Tucker from VMware. So have you considered virtualization in the sense that, so you're doing this template formation and configuration, and virtualization in a way is giving you another indirection where you can do this once, store this, and maybe, I don't know much about MLab, but do you think that would help?
Well, so one of the resources that MLab can manage today is virtual machines, okay? So there's nothing that really prevents us from doing that. I would say that it's not an issue of virtualization. It's an issue of being able to conveniently determine the effect of the process, right? And being able, I mean, on the one hand, right, for making records, you want to be able to conveniently determine the effect of a process, right? And we obviously could do better than that. I mean, or we could do better than we are currently doing in our prototype this way. And virtual machines might be able to help us do that in certain ways, right?
Right, because you could record the whole state, not just of the application, but like of the whole system, really.
Right, and so certainly also virtual machines are very important for being able to execute it in the future, right, at various levels of fidelity.
I mean, like you can also, just to point it out, you can also do like snapshotting or whatever. So like you, right now you're using Subversion to actually store results or move back in time or forward in time. Mm-hmm. But you could act, since we are not really writing on the disk, we are sort of writing on a file, so we already have a snapshotting built in where you can go forward or backward in time, and whatever state of the system you want, you can just go over there.
Right.
Just wanted to bring it
up. No, that's an excellent comment. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hi, thanks for that. I hope you're joking about your very first statement on the very first.
You mean
page.
That I have here's my paper, or I have a problem?
No, the part about repeatable scientific research, because this seems to be like a really excellent way to capture the scientific method. I mean, you really are doing a huge service to the community by doing this. This is what science is about. Being able to reproduce results, and
you've obviously read the conclusion of the paper, so thank you very much.
Sorry, I didn't get the chance to read it yet, but
no,
I didn't know if you were joking or if you
Well, no, I'm. I just need to get your attention, right?
That's, okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
So, yes.
Actually, a follow-up question to the first question. It seems that in terms of the granularity of events you're capturing, you're primarily focusing on the results of a run. On the other hand, for debugging purposes, one often wants to record very, very low-level events
right.
to try to reproduce.
Right.
Exactly
so things that aren't
happening.
Right. So things that aren't necessarily in the net effect of the function, but the actual computation that sort of went on. I'd like to, you know, okay.
Right, right.
So
what I'm really wondering is, do you see these two things as separate concerns, or do you see that as one continuum that your work is trying to cover?
Well, so I would say that it is a continuum. I would say that our prototype needs help in that particular area, right? I mean, there's sort of this question, of course, as to just how much data do you actually cover? I mean, what events are actually of interest to the experimenter, okay? And in some sense, this is a very difficult question to answer. I mean, in some sense, it is a very difficult question to answer, right? Because it obviously depends very much on the domain. I think that the right answer there is that this is another example of being able to leverage the testbed management infrastructure itself, right? Where if I can get the testbed to provide different sorts of execution environments or different kinds of instrumentation, right, then basically this is sort of the flexibility that we want. And now the question is, in some sense, it's just implementation. And we have some people in our group who are doing things like stateful swap out or being able to go back in time and replay, you know, slowly. And obviously we're looking at integrating with their work with ours, but that's not done yet. So, thank you.
Thanks.